This week on Airbnb Update, we head back in time to 2012 to re-experience the RuneSpan. From the impact RuneSpan originally had to the later impact on training methods, we expose the true beauty of the RuneCrafting skill. And we share our first micro-lesson on action bars for PBF. This is Airbnb Update, episode 869, recorded Thursday, February 17th, 2022. Spans of time. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Just Hannes and myself here. Welcome back.
And thank you, Shane. Wait, is that an echo? It's so empty. I thought your voice was bouncing around.
Yeah, I feel like the two of us are here sitting in this empty room waiting for Double XP to start.
Yeah, it's like this cavernous area. It's so empty. We need to fill it up. What do you think?
Yeah, we're definitely going to fill it up, and I'm actually so happy to be here this week, and everybody who listens to the podcast, everyone who's a Patreon supporter and has talked to me knows that this is one of the highlights of the week. And, you know, damned if there's no update for us to talk about. There's always something RuneScape-wise to talk about, and we've had some really interesting ideas about how we could go about talking about, let's just say, updates from the past that didn't get their fair shake, but I'll deliver more on that in just a moment. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome to RSBNB Update. You can follow along in our full show notes that you can find at update.rsbnb.com. You can also join our friends chat, which is Bits Bytes in-game. And of course, we also have our Discord at rsbnb.com/discord. So this week, of course, is a minor patch week in the lead up to Double XP. And everybody, of course, as you're listening to this, is focusing on your Double XP gains. That's running from the 18th until the 28th. So we're going to go through those patch notes, but what we're also going to do after this is we're going to be debuting a new feature here of RSBNB Update. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be looking at sufficiently old pieces of RuneScape content, that are more than 5 years old at this point, that didn't get their fair shake when they came out, because either they were underpowered, they were misunderstood, or, as is the cases of some of them that we're going to be talking about in future installments of this, we just didn't have the breadth of the RSBNB Update team in order to pull off said piece of content. But what we're going to be looking at this week is the RuneSpan, both from the perspective of how it functions today and how it functioned back in 2012. It came out at the tail end of April 2012. Can you believe that, Tannis?
Yeah, man. I can. That was
a long time ago, and
was a long time ago, yeah.
It was a seismic shift, and that's why we want to look at it, because it's just something that's so much part of a fixture of what that one skill, RuneCrafting, is in game, that we want to have a look at it as that being the first installment of this kind of content that we're going to be looking at. It's not so much that we didn't understand it or didn't have the team to go through it then with RuneSpan. There will be others that come up that fit that bill in subsequent installments of this series. But with RuneSpan, it was just something that we didn't know was going to have the huge seismic impact that it did. And the fact that it's still there today is why we want to go back to it, but we'll come back to that in just a little bit. But I think we should move on to the patch notes first, and then we'll, of course, at the tail end of the show, also catch up what we've been up to with Wars Reckoning. So, in patch notes this week, fixed an issue which prevented a lot of items, and this is my editorializing of the patch note here, a lot of items from being used with Magic Note paper. Items might include things like the lapis lazuli, wooden nuts, wooden brooches, bear meat, buckets of milk, eggs, red berries, various cooked meats and raw meats, cheese, onions, potatoes, cream, lemons, limes, oranges, pineapples, pineapple rings, and fruit chunks of various types, vodka, you weren't able to note vodka, whiskey, and gin before, believe it or not, in game.
Sure.
Who knew? Who knew? I laughed when I saw that one, but there's another patch note I'll laugh about later on this one. Salmon, tuna, raw rabbit, sweet corn, or cooked sweet corn, and bitter cap mushrooms, just to name a few. So, I don't particularly know where these would be dropped, but it's weird that there are these edge cases for Magic Note papers. And I will say, in that any of the Slayer that I've done recently, which is minor, the Magic Note papers have definitely helped out in that process of keeping drops that I want to keep from those tasks. So, just a wonderful shout out to Magic Note paper for anybody who doesn't use it. You probably should be using it since it's cheap enough these days. So,
yep, it's really reasonable. So,
yeah,
you know,
and hey, if you're treasure hunter averse, you can even make your own, though. I think that's a little bit more expensive than even just buying it off the GE. So,
yeah, and I mean, it's great though, because it for those few things that you just, you know, it we don't have a cleaner or a, you know, something that's going to break it down.
Yeah.
Just whatever it is, you do have that. But I mean, more and more, you know, there's not a lot of drops to pick up, but for those few that there are.
Yeah, exactly. Now here's one, and lots of people are going to either laugh or cry about this. The defense pylons in the Temple of Amanishi are now working and attacking players as originally intended. So the way this works, when you first enter the Temple of Amanishi, you've of course got the main room with the kitchen and whatnot, and then the second room when you're making your way to the first boss in Elite Dungeon 1, before you run over the flying dragon, sky dragon thingamajigs, I forget what they're called, the defense pylons were there, and previously this would just negate about half of what you would have to do in that first room. So Elite Dungeon 1 just got a little bit more complicated, but they weren't working and didn't work for a long time. I think it was shortly after release, actually, that they stopped working. So rip for anybody who was trying to get through Elite Dungeon 1 easily. It's going to be just a tiny, tiny bit harder. Using Tardian crystals on attuned crystal boots now works properly. And increase the range of loot sharing so that all players within a multi-combat boss encounter are given the rewards up upon the boss's defeat. And this will also prevent a single player from obtaining all drops from a group boss fight.
Ooh. Oopsie daisy.
Yeah. Apparently some of the stuff that was happening with this one, and I don't particularly know how this would work. It sounds as though that this was set up in a way that it was impacting people who might have been trying to sell leeches to Iron Man. I don't particularly know how that would work, but I mean, at the end of the day, all these things that pop up are tied to one boss in particular. I know there was a conversation that happened on patch day this week about where this might apply or might not even apply, and it's very, very edge. So I'd imagine that this is kind of like the Mall of Omens thing that we talked about last week on the podcast, and that it's a fix that's going to affect some people, but it's not going to change the main experience for everybody at the end of the day.
Nothing is going to fundamentally change, Shane. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I've heard that quote before. I'm trying to remember where it's from.
It's a proverb. It's a very, very, it's a proverb, a very old proverb, or maybe it was just said by a very old person.
Okay.
Like
all right. Fair enough. It's kind of like the more things change, the more they stay the same, right?
Yeah, very good.
That's a real throwback. That's even a throwback to RuneSpan era on this podcast.
Yes, it is.
And finally, Water Fiend no longer disappears, activating its ability while fishing Wobgongs.
Very French? Okay.
So, somebody would take a Water Fiend to their uncharted island to double any resources they would gather while fishing there. And the Water Fiend would just disappear.
Yeah, that's didn't see that one coming.
No. And this was the patch note that just made me chuckle this week, because see, first of all, it says Water Fiend no longer disappears, when it should say the Water Fiend familiar, or the Water Fiend binding contract familiar no longer disappears after activating its ability. But this, I obviously know what it means, but it just sounds amusing in that it's like, oh, there's no longer this stray water fin that will just disappear after that activates its ability while you're just standing there fishing these fish on your Ark Island.
Yeah, I was a little confused at first when it said the special ability. I'm like, special attack?
The thing that duplicates raw resources when you're gathering.
Yeah,
right?
I get it now, but I wasn't sure what they were even talking about at first.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to the RuneSpan. Let's take a step back in time.
Good old RuneSpan. Back when in the simple days of 2012.
We're going back in time to April 30th, 2012. And the RuneSpan has just launched. And we're going to first discuss it, how this appeared in 2012, and then where it sits today in the wider runecrafting meta of how to train the skill. The RuneSpan was chosen at RuneFest 2011's You Be the Judge session, where attendees chose a new runecrafting training method from a choice of 5 potential updates. And with that came RuneSpan. Now, of course, since we are doing this whole time-traveling business back to 2012, I just want to put everybody back in the mind that the most effective way to train runecrafting prior to RuneSpan was running nature runes or running law runes. As in, you would hire a group of people to run the runes back and forth with you if, and this is a big if, you didn't want to do the ZMI altar. Because there was a ZMI altar as well, and that just had you doing the running, but if you just wanted an AFK way of training, you had to pay out and have runners pay. And just for comparison's sakes, in terms of how this works, or how this worked, should I say works or worked? Should we go all the way and pretend we're back in 2012 with this?
That's going to be hard to do. Or what, are you trying to like throw us into some kind of temporal war here, Shane?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. But put simply, we are looking at runecrafting training methods of about, well, it's rather pitiful what you would get for training without RuneSpan. Do you want to wager a guess? Do you remember what that was? What the XP was back in the day?
Oh, it's probably about 70k at best.
No, it was lower.
Okay.
Way lower. Yep.
And that's not even the worst part. I mean, it was the actual way you trained.
It was through the abyss.
Horrible. Yeah. What, like 50k?
It was somewhere in the range of around 20k, depending on what runes you were doing.
Yeah, no. That's why I was happy.
Yeah.
I was very happy when RuneSpan came out. Well, I think we were all very happy when it first came out, but even after some changes were made, I was still moderately happy.
Yeah. Yeah. So depending on what runes you are and what levels, I mentioned low XP. Anywhere between 24,000 to 206,000 XP an hour currently, given the current era of doing any of the runes out there. If you are using the demonic skull, it goes higher, of course, a little bit. But you see how painful it was doing runecrafting through the abyss.
Oh, yeah, it was. Doing runecrafting in any way was just, it wasn't enjoyable. I think that's, you know, kind of the worst.
Yeah, because, you know, there's the whole idea of getting yourself killed and whatnot. But at the end of the day, it was a lot of micro and running. And here's the actual XP rates per hour. Earth runes are 29K XP an hour. Fire's 31. Cosmic's 42. Nature's 47. Law's 61. Death 64, and then when you get your second pouch, it goes up to 81, and bloods are 85. Of course, we didn't have bloods back in the day, so you just got to assume that deaths would have been the highest that you would have had. So, and I don't think we had we did have the giant pouch. We did have that. But you would have been looking anywhere topping out around 60 to 80K XP an hour for a relatively highly intensive way of training.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to mention too. It was almost the opposite of what we have now, or at least what we hope for, which is active, you know, rewarding active gameplay with the best, you know, rates. And yeah, those were not good rates.
No, not at all. And just for comparison's sake, RuneSpan itself completely changed the game in that it was low movement. You could, of course, optimize by finding better islands, but if you were to, in effect, focus on one of the best islands for the low-level runecrafting, and you had, say, you had level 33 runecrafting, that XP rate would jump up to 28.5k XP an hour. And at the very high end of this, you can expect, on average, to get about 90-odd k XP per hour at high-level RuneSpan. Now, of course, if you were able to get consistent, strong nodes, like, say, maybe a Soul node, if you had 90 RuneCrafting, you would be expecting around 129K XP an hour. Undead Souls, 136K XP an hour. And you see what happens here with this, is that RuneSpan effectively made RuneCrafting so you didn't need to move. It also made it so that you would have XP rates about 1 to 1.5 times what you would have had previously just running these runes through the abyss. And with that, there are also, of course, the new D&Ds that appeared as well. The Stranded Wizards, of course, and the Rune Sphere. Whenever I do RuneSpan, if the wizard is on my floor, I'll get it. And of course, if it's a higher leveled one, that's one that you almost always want to get. And as for Rune Spheres, of course, that's something else that spawned its own industry in terms of being able to find the Rune Spheres that would spawn, and people would go call them out and make it easier for people to find them for that dump of XP with that.
And I mean, you have the numbers, but it felt even better when came out.
Oh yeah.
It you know, I could have swore it was more than that, just because it felt more like that. And then I think it did get toned down, didn't it? Like a few months later,
It did a bit. And you know what's actually really interesting, thinking back on all this, and I think this is part of why this was in my brain as though that this was something that we should have done in terms of talking about this, is that I recently, of course, trained upwards to level 44 on my alt, and that was, of course, all with RuneSpan. And in the span of about a half an hour, I went from level 1 to 30 RuneCrafting. And it wasn't painful at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then you compare that with what people were doing for nature rune running and how you would just do a handful of nature runes at level 44 or a handful of cosmic runes or even fire runes leading up to that, you wind up in a situation where the initial first runecraft just took months even to get to, say, 91 runecrafting with that. And it just shows how RuneSpan is such a godsend and was needed back when this was brought in 2012.
Well, yeah. See, now I had a friend that, I mean, he had spreadsheets of the alts that he would create on Double XP weekend. He'd create an alt because of a referrer friend or whatever, and then take that down to the RuneSpan, just park it there. He'd end up with level 50 by the, you know, by the end of usually the first day, but definitely by the end of the weekend. Well, now he can. Now that's a wax alt, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and that was the beauty of RuneSpan. Like, you could seriously just spin off these beeswax alts from the referrer friend accounts and stuff that were just sitting there anyway, right? Like, give it something to do.
Yeah. I wonder how many people do that.
There's probably
do the wax alts.
There's some. I guarantee there's some, probably less than there used to be, because that in of itself, you know, could pay for a bond, like, you know, less than a week.
And I assume this would be old bond prices, not present bond prices.
That's what I mean. So it was probably, you know, it's probably a lot more viable back in the day than now, I would think, but
because we're still looking at like 47 mil for a bond right now.
Wow, yeah, they just keep going up, and yeah, so it probably it might, I don't even know, it might not even work now, but
yeah, I think one of the new hotspots would be something. Well, maybe it was archaeology, but maybe it's something else now. But I know archaeology was pretty hot last year and in 2020 when that came out. So now, one thing I remember that we had a big discussion about with RuneSpan when it arrived was, did it change the identity of the skill too much in that it changed runecrafting, so to speak, actually making the runes, into a skill where you're going to play what is effectively people saw as a mini game? Or
yeah.
I don't know if you, like, it's not necessarily a mini game since you can come and go as you want, but it has that same general idea that you're kind of gathering things within a set arena.
And see, I think that is because at that time, you know, RuneScape's 11, 12 years old, something like that.
Yeah.
And each skill had a very unique, very distinct identity and a very unique, very distinct way of training it. But we hadn't gotten to the point where we had these different branches of skill training. So not every skill had an AFK way to train it and a this and an active way and a money making way, like they try to balance now, which gives the skill a richer kind of identity. But before, you identified the skill kind of as the way you trained it,
right?
So runecrafting was this really hard, really grindy, just, you know, if you went through it, you wanted the credit for it. And then all of a sudden RuneSpan comes out and it made it feel easy, right? Like, you're doing less, getting more. But I don't know. I feel like it was because, like, we just hadn't gotten used to expecting different training methods, you know, for the different skills like that.
Yeah. And one thing I actually want to point out with this is that something that they did back in the day that was very difficult to wrap our heads around with this is that you actually had to go through a lot to get the talismans to even access those rune altars. You know, there was a point in history where the nature talisman was almost 20k GP in terms of how much you had to pay for a nature talisman. Because you had to kill, I'm trying to remember what the actual old critter was that dropped it. I'm looking at the list here, and I don't know. Probably from the Abyss, maybe? No, it would have had to come into game before then. Fremenic Market Guards, maybe? I don't know. That might have been it, because that's a very rare one. The Death Talisman was dropped by Dark Beasts, and you had to camp those in order to get that. And when we also talk about the Law Talisman, once again, you got things like Sir Harry, Sir Carl. These are basically paladins that you would have to kill to get access to use these talismans. So it wasn't just that runecrafting itself was a hard and laborious thing to do. It was also the fact that it was so hard to actually get the talismans to access the rune altars when those altars were still only a few months old. That was also adding to the wall that people ran into. So the point is that runecrafting had this huge wall around it, and RuneSpan completely brought that down. And
Gygax, tear down that wall. And they did.
Yeah, and that's why I go back to this, because you had people at the time who had untrimmed runecrafting capes. People got untrimmed runecrafting capes back before RuneSpan was out. And when RuneSpan came out, they felt as though that their untrimmed runecrafting cape had been devalued because of that.
Well, if you think about it this way, though, Shane, if you have an untrimmed runecrafting cape, chances are all you have is an untrimmed runecrafting cape. That's it.
What do you mean?
I mean, you probably don't have anything else going for you.
Oh.
If you have enough time to get an untrimmed runecraft, I could understand being a little salty.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I just put myself into that mindset that you're saying that 2012, but and we're kind of treading on this territory. What would you think today if you saw an untrimmed runecrafting cape?
I would think, I think there's probably a runecrafting alt, a soul rune runner, that sat in the rune span.
Yeah.
Till they were able to run souls.
Yeah. But looking at this, 36.5k XP per hour back in 2012. For the mid-tier levels was absolutely huge. Fast forward this all the way up to level 66, you could expect around 63k XP per hour, and then once you unlock the soul nodes, that would jump up to about 93k. And this, at the time, was runecrafting XP that we could only dream of. And it wasn't until we got further things like Demonic Skull and Soul Runecrafting that really offered two different varied choices for what to do with runecrafting with that. And I think at the end of the day, and I think we can starting to wrap up the look at this from the 2012 angle. In 2012, we cannot underscore how big of a deal it was that you would have been able to AFK runecraft and not have to, you know, be running around the game world and necessarily paying people if you wanted a training method that just allow you to stay in a spot or a relatively confined spot for that matter. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. It was revolutionary, right? Like at that time you didn't even have that many AFK kind of skills. Fishing. Woodcutting. Those were the big ones. This is pre bonfire.
Yeah.
It's pre a lot of, you know, AFK methods that came out afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, let's see, when did the Runecrafting Guild came out? Yeah, the Runecrafting Guild was already there beforehand. And I actually wanted to look this up because one of the things the Runecrafting Guild brought, and I don't know if you remember this, is that they actually added teleport tablets to the various altars as a way of, in effect, softening up how people felt about runecrafting, in that you'd be able to go take part in this Great Orb Project minigame, get teleport tablets to all the various rune altars. And the idea behind that was, okay, maybe this will make people feel good about runecrafting. But I think what wound up happening with that is that the Great Orb Project at this point kind of effectively died out, and then nowadays it's really only played on Spotlight. As is the unfortunate case of most minigames.
It seemed like it was either I don't remember if it was a task, like an achievement in the task list, yep. or if it was something like that. Yeah, I remember having to do it once. Like, I played one game just to check it off on the list.
Yeah. And one other point I just wanted to make before we're talking about this era of old school runecrafting, and we can call it old school at this point because that's what it is, I think. Runecrafting came out in February of 2004 with the RuneScape 2 beta. And we can call effectively the launch of RS2 in March 2004. I think it was like the tail end, last week of March 2004. And the point I'm trying to make with this is that we waited 8 years for a method of runecrafting training that was going to be faster than running nature runes. We waited 8 years.
Yeah. 8 years. Wow. So I guess we can't ever complain.
Right. And then here we are 10 years, almost 10 years after Runespan, comparing what things used to be like in, I guess you could say, the bad old days.
Well, yeah, definitely. It feels like ancient, you know, like... it was torture. I feel sorry for anybody that got
one. Oh, yeah. Like it was a huge accomplishment to get even just, you know, level 44 runecrafting for natures, or 54 to make your own law runes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can see it.
And I just want to run everybody through a quick little calculation here just to show how painful it would have been crafting these nature runes in terms of one batch. So, looking at this, we're just going to assume that you had an Amulet of Glory to teleport with, and you got your Nature Talisman in your inventory. So you're going to bring 27 essence with you. And the XP, I think it was something like 9. We'll just say 9. You get 243 runecrafting XP per inventory of Nature's Tanis.
Wow. Wow. Oh, God, that's sad.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was still like that, I would be, like, writing letters on paper to Jagex saying, please give me more Treasure Hunter. Like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, you can.
Like, I will buy anything you want. Just make it stop.
And, you know, we're looking at, just in terms of the amount of XP that you would have to get from this, you have to go forward to June 2005 when the pouches were added. So it was a year plus before runecrafting pouches were added too. And this wasn't the massive pouch that you had. So this is another fun calculation to do. Assume you had 75 runecrafting, which this was out of the field for a lot of people when this came out. So let's just not even say that. Let's just say 50 for the hell of it. Okay? You'd be able to hold an extra 18 essence in your inventory with 3 pouches. So you'd have your 18 essence plus your nature talisman. So there's 4. So you'd be able to, at that point, craft, you'd be able, at that point, craft 42 nature roots per run.
Don't hurt yourself there. Gosh. Man. I'm glad I came in when I did. Oof.
And the reason I'm talking about this is because I remember doing this kind of runecrafting back in the day.
Yeah, man. And I thought air runes was bad. I didn't even know what was bad.
And if you had level 75 runecrafting, you'd be able to hold an additional 30 essence. But of course, with that, you'd only be able to craft 23 on top of that. So you'd only be able to craft 53 nature runes per run. And the nature rune, it was 9. Amazing how I remembered that XP rate. You'd get 477 XP per inventory if you had 75 rune crafting.
Well, yeah, because every time you looked up, you felt sad. And you remember how much what that number was that made you feel sad.
And I'm trying to think, where would be the closest teleport to Karamja to access that altar? Because we didn't have a lodestone. How would you get there? We want to get to Karamja without a lodestone.
And boat doesn't get you close enough. There isn't any teleports to tie.
To tie Bowani? No.
No. None to Shiloh.
Part of me says that you would. And I don't even know if the boat charter network was in at this point. No, it wouldn't have been. So you would have had to Amulet of Glory to the banana plantation.
Huh.
And then run.
That's a hell of a long run. No wonder the XP rate's so slow.
To get 477 runecrafting XP. And 53 nature runes. And let's not even get started talking about the law altar and death altar when those got added.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the law altar had the complication of being on Entrena, and the death altar at the end of the maze in the light maze in Morning's End Part 2.
And wasn't the big method of laws like using the balloon network, something like that?
Yeah, but once again, that wasn't in until later. There were a few years that passed between the time laws were added and the Captain Picard quest was added to the game, which is a wonderful quest, by the way.
Yes.
So, with that, I think we have just made the case as to why RuneSpan is wonderful, and was so wonderful back in 2012.
Mm-hmm. And it got better.
I honestly can't believe that we put up with that back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I only... So there would have been... Well, there was 4 years of RuneSpan, and I don't think I was like... Man, I couldn't have been over 50-something when it came out. But I remember when it did, I jumped up pretty quickly.
Yeah. So. Oof. All right. Well, we're going to talk about what RuneSpan's used for today, right now, in just a moment. But before we do that, I'd like to thank our Patreon supporters for this episode, for allowing us to do what we do here at RSBNB Update. In particular, this week, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Big Huge Rant, Bryflex, Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plox, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Elo Matey, Free Milk, Jacob R., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski Plays, Ling01, Nate the Great, Nick G., Patty the Architect, Parnassius, Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel FL, CO Tan, Scott DS, Seth W., Stubby, Taylor B., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., Zant, and Zazakon. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us. And if you're wondering what we're talking about here, this is our Patreon page at patreon.com/RSBNB, where you can support the podcast monetarily if you so choose to. For as little as $1 a month, you gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits. And these episodes include things like our Daily Scape tier from a couple months back, including, of course, other great hits as well. And, you know, the thing that always comes up with these monthly bits is that we always learn something from doing it, which I think is just so wonderful that we're able to do after all this time. Everybody always learns something, and everybody always comes away smiling from them, because, you know, we go into these things, we're not sure what to expect, and there's always a question of what are we going to learn through this. And it's just so wonderful that everybody allows us to do this, and like we did last month with the skill reworks, just lots of fun discussions and deep dives into RuneScape things are talked about. So if this sounds interesting to you, check it out at patreon.com/RSBNB for as little as $1 a month. And we also do have a VIP tier if you want to give a bit more. Starting at $3 a month, you'll receive a special VIP rank on Discord and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, in addition to the high-quality stereo versions of the podcast that you'll receive. And we also do have a $5 a month option where you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain early access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And of course, this weekend we'll be hosting our monthly Patreon roundtable. That's probably already happened by the time you're hearing this, but if you are a Patreon member, please do go back into the feed and you'll find a recording of that there. So that's another thing we always look forward to, just getting around and chatting with everybody. It's always a fun time, and some of the best ones of those always happen on double XP events, and I am so eager to see what we're gonna get ourselves up to this time. So thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you.
Alrighty. So runecrafting today. What's your favorite method of runecrafting training?
Runespan.
Yep. Runespan?
Yep. Okay. Still Runespan.
Alright. For me, I don't know. I honestly kind of like soul runes just because they were unique and different from the rest of everything else, but I understand that they're not the optimal form of XP that you can get.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we put ourselves back into the lens of what we had for 2012 and bring that lens forward to 2022, we see that with this runecrafting still is very viable if you want an AFK training method, to the point that you're still going to be getting that 90-odd K XP an hour that we talked about. And if you wanted to go beyond that in this day and age, you would need to have all your pouches and everything working as anticipated, and you would either have to do blood runes or soul runes via the Abyss. Which, you know, in all honesty, has been made a bit easier. They've been adding a lot in recent years, I feel, to abyssal rune crafting, including the relics from archaeology, one of them that brings you directly to the center of the Abyss, another one that prevents pouch degradation. We also, of course, have the ethereal outfit and the familiar that can hold rune essence, just yep, amplifying how much you're able to bring, how much essence you're able to bring, that is. And of course, with 120 herb lore, we got the power burst of sorcery, which improves the rune multiplier, increases it so that you're effectively able to double that amount of runes that you're able to produce, doubles your runes per essence multiplier. So, and you know, that's always a fun thing to talk about. Because if you look at the RS Wiki money making guide, water rune crafting and blood rune crafting via the Abyss right now,
mm-hmm,
32 million GP per hour.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
People would be, no, everyone would, everyone and their brother would be doing it.
The interesting part about that is that I think that assumes a fairly optimal run. And last time Earth was on the podcast, he was actually water runecrafting while he was on the show. And had he been doing everything he would have been told to do in that guide, he would have been on the way to, I think he said, approaching like 25 mil an hour profit back in the day doing that. With waters. And of course, we all know that that's because of the insane amount of water runes that are needed for the Insight Fear spell. And there's, and you know, this is something that Jagex said in the live stream last week. They were looking at the amount of runes coming in and coming out of the economy, and because of that, fair warning for anybody who does the daily rune shop purchases that you might not want to be holding onto water runes come various Mondays if they're going to be putting these kind of updates in. So just a bit of a warning.
Here we go again.
Yeah. So.
Runes are too expensive. No, they're too cheap. No, they're too expensive. No, they're too cheap.
Okay.
There's too many runes. There's not enough. There's too many.
Then comes the question of Vizwax as well.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just kind of tee this up here then. I think the way that I see it is that if you want an AFK runecrafting training method, Runespan is definitely still the way to go.
Definitely. And if you do have those little, if you do have the extras, you know, you have the outfit, it's not just useful running runes, it's useful in Runespan too.
Yeah, that's true. Because doesn't it offer you teleport to the Yellow Wizard or something to that effect?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And that's important as well. I wonder if anybody does Aranya ZMI Altar runecrafting anymore these days.
I don't think so.
No, because that was really cumbersome to run through, I think, as well. So, but, and of course, the reason everybody did that before Runespan was that it gave double the amount of XP that regular runecrafting did. So,
In
essence,
you might not know what that was going to be, but you knew it was going to be better than what you could do.
Right?
Anyway, yeah.
And the way I'm going to sum all this up is that if you're looking to make money in this day and age, or you're looking for the ultimate in terms of the highest XP for runecrafting, I would say you're going to do Abyssal runecrafting, probably with Bloods. Just because soul runes are so slow in terms of the fact that you don't make them each time you run, and you got to spend time charging the altars. So I'm going to say maximal XP and money goes to rune crafting Bloods, or just rune crafting in general through the Abyss, maybe with a demonic skull. And if you want to AFK, that's where the Runespan falls into play. And based on everything we've looked at and everything we've seen design wise from Jagex, I have to say that the Runespan itself, barring a few balancing changes that were made for content that was added almost 10 years ago, at this point, had a really good design around it, because still today, there's a choice of what way you train runecrafting. And to me, that's one of the hallmarks of good design, is that if it makes the player make a choice.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and like you said, there were some balancing because, you know, for a while, they did have to make the actual running of runes better.
And these were things that happened over time, of course, with, you know, the bigger pouches at level 90 rune crafting, the outfits, the power burst ultimately with 120 herblore, and then the relics.
And a lot more altar teleports coming in.
Right. So Wicked Hood.
Wicked Hood. Yeah. How could we forget the Wicked Hood?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's in a really good place now.
Oh, yeah. But runecrafting as a skill is in a really good place, I think.
Yeah. But I almost would have to ask, if it wasn't for Runespan, would those other things ever really been pushed? Would they have needed to be improved? Or, you know what I mean?
No.
Like, exactly.
Because for the longest time, the thing was is that Runespan changed the identity of the skill.
Mm-hmm.
And people wanted reasons to do traditional runecrafting rather than, as we said, getting that paltry, you know, 400, 500 XP running nature runes.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, we see the runecrafting through the abyss, XP rates go up, and we see further enhancements to that on the monetary side as well. So, huh? You know what's interesting, and I want to say this, and I want your opinion on this. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to like runecrafting as a skill more than I did coming into this episode. Just looking at the way everything's laid out together.
Yeah, I kind of had the same feeling a few minutes ago. I was like, you know, this is a
it's actually a pretty good skill.
Yeah.
Like, we don't really think about it because we got our 99s and we just take it and move on, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting, I think, thinking about it now, how this all kind of tees itself up together with that. I'm wondering if maybe I should make 99 runecrafting the second 99 on my skilling alt.
Hey. There you go.
I don't know how I'd get the pouches having only level 3 combat. That might be kind of interesting to see happen.
That might be challenging.
Yeah, it could be challenging, but hey, that's why we do these weird things in RS. So. So, I guess in a weird way, we owe modern runecrafting to the runespan?
I think it's a fair statement.
Which, this is almost bordering on monthly bit territory, because this is the kind of revelation we make on those. Like, let's of course just put aside the fact that Sol Runes were unlocked after the Fight Club quest, and those didn't come out till 2017, which was a huge gap between that and Morning's End Part 2 for the Death Runes. And that you had to go through the Metaphos rep for it. There's still that little niggle along the way with that. But, you know, overall, we owe modern runecrafting to the runespan. And everything that everybody likes about the skill from runespan as its own AFK training method, to even using the abyss to make runes for the maximal amount of XP or profit, that likely wouldn't have happened without runespan. And I think that's something that a lot of people really don't think of.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And
but we did.
And I guess that's why we wanted this discussion to happen. And in many ways, this is going to be a hallmark for what we do on these episodes going forward. So I don't think I have anything else left to say about runecrafting or the runespan today or in 2012. I think we covered most of it. I know for me, I smiled when I was able to get all the way up to 44 runecrafting without breaking a sweat on the alt.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, I bet.
All in all, I think we have a good skill at hand here. And if you guys want to hear more of these kind of old updates in retrospective, looking at how they were when they came out and where they're at today, let us know and we'll start making a list, because this discussion here has really made me want to double down on that.
A mini bite.
Yeah, and just as a bit of a teaser onto what one of the ones could be, one of the other ones we've been batting around kind of behind the scenes could be Mass Cab Raids, because we didn't have much of a PVM contingent when that came out in 2015. So if you want to hear that one, we can do that as well at some point. But, of course, we're going to move on and wrap the show up shortly. I do have some things I want to talk about at the end of that. But before we do that, I want to share our first micro lesson. What did you think of this, by the way, our foray into making video guides here at our SpeedB?
I thought it was a very, very good, first time out. And I mean, I think it would be helpful, but you know, it's so hard when you're a veteran player and all this stuff is second nature to you. But I put myself, you know, in the place of someone that doesn't know these things, and I think, yeah, I wish there was a micro lesson for Stowe. I wish there was the same kinds of things. So I think was very well put together.
Yeah, and we're actually gonna put that into the podcast right now for anybody who hasn't heard it. And after it's done, please do head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.com/rsbnb and give it a like and subscribe. So without any further ado, here's our first micro lesson on how to build Revolution action bars. In this micro lesson, you'll learn how to set up your action bar for PVM. A micro lesson is a short and to the point video guide that teaches you about RuneScape. This time, one of our combat and PVM experts, Thaxi, who you may have heard on the podcast before, is going to teach us how to build action bars.
Action bars can be set up in-game with a default that'll get you going, but is less than optimal. Today, we'll aim to set up an action bar for each combat style that will provide good damage output and set you on the path to making further upgrades down the road. The order of your abilities is the single most important part of doing damage in RuneScape, and it can make or break how your combat goes, but it can also seem like a pretty complicated black box. The goal of this lesson will be to break that down into simple priorities and give you the tools to feel confident building and adjusting your own action bars. We're going to start with Revolution. Revolution automatically fires off abilities left to right with whatever is off cooldown going first. We're going to assume that's active and allow it to activate ultimates and thresholds. First and foremost, your bar must prioritize the abilities that will deal the most damage. Determining how powerful an ability can be is complicated and depends in part on how many targets it can hit and how quickly the damage comes out. We've created a basic ranking for you that you can find in the description below. Here are the basic abilities for a two-handed magic bar, ordered from strongest to weakest. And the question you ask at this point is, why don't we have these abilities in this order on a regular bar? The answer to this is that, as listed, this bar will sometimes not have any abilities off cooldown, meaning we resort to very weak auto attacks. Which brings us to the second part of making a good action bar, ensuring something is always off cooldown. Here, we've accomplished that very simply by moving a shorter cooldown ability, in this case Sonic Wave, one slot earlier on the bar. Because it has a shorter cooldown, it will activate more often, stalling the later abilities on this bar and allowing stronger abilities to come off cooldown without having to use our weakest abilities in the meantime. On its own, this is a pretty good bar. This is effectively what I use when I want to play a bit more actively. But if you're wanting to AFK, there's a few more steps to build into this bar. We have a lot of adrenaline, and we need to think about spending that. The thing to remember here is that adrenaline is damage, and at 100% adrenaline, you stop earning more from your abilities. So it's important to add thresholds to spend that adrenaline. We've done that here, keeping in mind you still want to put abilities in order of strength. For example, this bar shows deep impact after Dragon Breath, reflecting the average damage of those abilities. This is generally the ability bar I'd use to AFK a Slayer task. Spending more adrenaline on thresholds versus ultimates gives you a more even damage output across your rotation, because you don't have that power trough when building back to 50% adrenaline after you use an ultimate. With that said, if I've got a big chunky target in front of me, a damage boosting ultimate will absolutely increase my damage output. So let's talk about what that looks like in an ability bar. When using ultimates, you try to activate them as close to their cooldown as possible. On a Revolution bar that includes an ultimate, it's important you don't have too many thresholds leeching away adrenaline and delaying you from using that ultimate. In this case, we've removed our weakest threshold, that's Deep Impact, in order to fire off the Sunshine more often. As a review, our goal is to fire off our strongest ability available, to avoid auto-attacking, and to use the adrenaline we have to avoid sitting at 100%. Here are a set of finished action bars using the basic abilities available to each of the other styles. But you should feel empowered to create and adjust your ability bars as you unlock more advanced ability options. And you can do that really simply by following what we've done in this lesson. The first thing you'll do is to place your new ability on your bar based on its power. Then just go to a combat dummy and let your bar run. See if you reach the end of your bar, and if you do, adjust those powerful but low cooldown abilities a slot earlier on your bar to compensate. Then, see if you spend more than a few abilities at 100% adrenaline out of every minute, and if so, add in another threshold to use that extra adrenaline. This method should work for any combination of unlocks, and hopefully clears up some of the confusion about how to build a good ability rotation. Please note, this micro lesson is intentionally brief. The points laid out in this lesson are general rules, and there are caveats and exceptions to each of them with more advanced combat. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to add them in the comments below. And if you found this video useful, like and subscribe.
And we ask that you do just that if you found that discussion about action bars interesting. And what I can say is that micro lesson number two is already in the can and being produced currently, and that one is going to be on invention perks and getting started with those.
Looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one. And you know what I think I'm most excited about with this is that we've found a format that works for the combat and PVM side of things, but we're already having discussions about how we can apply this to various skilling things as well.
Yeah.
And the reason we're doing this, and one thing I hope that all the podcast listeners appreciate, is that there's so many guides out there that are 15 to 25 minutes long. There are also guides that are visual first, as in that if you just listen to them, you're not going to take anything away from them. And those are two things we really want this format to excel on, is that first, we want it to be done in about 5 minutes or so. Second is that, and this is one thing we specifically thought about you with Tanis, is that we want them to be audio first so that you can listen to them and still learn something, because too many guides out there rely on visual components to make them work.
Yep. I couldn't agree more.
And to take that further to the next step, we're actually providing transcripts for these and putting them in as closed captions on YouTube for these as well.
Love it.
Which I know is something that you would definitely want if you were looking up for something RuneScape related.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if that's your cup of tea, please do give us a like and subscribe on youtube.com/RSBNB. All right. What do you got for your pick of the week?
My pick of the week this week is a new show that is on Amazon Prime, I think it's Prime Video, but it's called Reacher, and I've read every Jack Reacher book that has ever been written.
And probably seen the cheesy movies too.
Well, I saw the one that, yeah, they attempted to make Tom Cruise Jack Reacher, and if you've read the books, not a bad movie, but he is not Jack Reacher.
No, and the problem with that, I think, is that the character there blends too close to the character he plays in Mission Impossible. And as a result of that, Jack Reacher loses anything of what it's supposed to be. Because you always have in mind that you're watching Mission Impossible Tom Cruise rather than Jack Reacher Tom Cruise.
Yes. Yep, exactly. And the guy that they have casted for this, I mean, he looks like a square jaw marine. Like I could believe this guy's Jack Reacher, right? Like, just, you know, this the way things are said, it's very much a Jack Reacher way. That was something else that Tom Cruise just couldn't. You know, there's so much in the books about how Reacher. You know, Reacher says nothing. You can just tell he's probably just looking at him, you know, giving him its look. And that was definitely something that was missing.
Did you know
movie,
that your Jack Reacher character was in DC Legends of Tomorrow?
No, it didn't.
Also Smallville. Which is like a Superman precursor show of the early 2000s.
Yeah. No, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. That's cool.
And a few one-off episodes, but those are the places you might know him from. Oh, and Titans, which is a TV series as well. Mm-hmm. So, all right.
So yeah, that's my pick. Think, you know, check it out. It can't be any worse than the Tom Cruise version.
Or some of the other shows that are out there in terms of their endings that make you really question your time investment to them. I'm not gonna rescind a pick of the week on the show, but you know, if that ever is something that people want to do, I could start making a list of certain TV shows and series that I would happily rescind as pick of the week on the show. So
you know, a finale is not. The end all be all. It's not the essence of the show. Hence, Enterprise. You gotta remove the finale from the body of the work.
All right, fair enough. And with that, moving on to some achievements, definitely the calm before the storm of Double XP. On February 16th, we had Atmahua with 120 invention, Fireshare with 99 invention, Necrodevil 8 with 99 dungeoneering, Added Darkmoor with 99 strength, Necrodevil 8 again with 99 farming, and Quester Ship with 120 magic.
All right, and then moving on to the 12th, we have Atmahua with 99 summoning. We have Ripiff with 99 cooking. We have Truly Weeb with 99 rune crafting of all things. Atmahua again with 99 prayer. Jadkor with 120 archaeology. And Mr. M with 99 farming, and Old Iron Ass with 99 archaeology. did you know that's what they called Simon Bolivar, Shane?
No, I probably because I don't even know who that is. But fair enough.
Yes, yeah. Well, he apparently could ride in the saddle for a week, so they called him Old Iron Ass.
I wonder if that's what Parnassus was going for when he made that account.
He's probably, I mean, it's just funny. I don't know. Who knows?
All right. Well, before we move on to what we've been doing, I'll just say that if you like what you hear on Update and you want to help us out, you want to be on a show or you want to write informer articles for us, or you feel you might just have a skill that you could offer to us, if you want to help us out with anything, do check out our Help Wanted form at update.rsbnb.com/help. If you want to appear on any of those, just fill that in, give us a way to contact you, and we'll reach out to you. I've been reaching out to the people who put their names in, and I got a couple more people to reach out to, but it's a way we learned about a lot of our friends here at RSBNB Update. And one thing I think that we can be proud of that a lot of other podcasts don't do is they don't make it easy to talk to their hosts and producers. And with this, we are actively encouraging our community to become a part of the show because we've just picked up so many wonderful people throughout all the years doing that. So if you feel you have something to offer to Update or you'd just like to help us out in one way or another, please do fill out the form at update.rsmovie.com/help. All right. What have you been up to on RS?
You know, I'm just grinding away. You know, I'm playing RuneScape the way that the way it's meant to be played for me, which is nose to the grindstone. And just keep doing it. And doing it. And doing it. And do it some
like
more.
The Energizer Bunny that never gives up.
Yeah, pretty much. This is definitely the longest 120 grind I've been on. But it'll feel good when I'm done. This one's definitely, I feel like it's even longer than the fishing was. Yeah.
You're talking about mining and smithing, right?
Yeah. Mining.
Have you decided if you're going to use them yourself or sell them? Because it is double XP.
You know, I haven't because I almost want to see how much I will get once I have the 120 mining. You know what I mean? And then decide.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. All right.
How about you, Shane?
You sitting down?
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, this past weekend, Tycho and myself, our friend from Sweden, who has been on the podcast many times before, we did an hour of hard mode care pack.
Wow.
Yeah, and we killed it about 3 or 4 times.
Damn.
Yeah. There were some disruptions in the background that was disrupting focus, but nonetheless, we did get a few kills. We both died a few times, of course, and the idea with free deaths is that, or safe deaths, rather, is that doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I took those methods, iterated on them. I haven't been able to do it with my ranged setup yet, which is unfortunate because that gives me the fastest kills. But I did manage to get a couple solo hard mode Karapak kills using magic and animate dead.
Well, damn. Look at you, Shane.
Yeah, but that's not all.
Oh, go on.
A couple days ago on Tuesday? Yeah. I got a nice message from David. And he's like, hey, do you want to go to Solak? And we did.
How did that go, Shane?
We got 2 Solak kills in an hour and got my first kill on attempt number 2. We trioed it.
Wow. You're just moving right on up the PBM ladder, huh?
Or no, it was on Sunday we went. But yeah, we got 2 kills in the hour. It was trioing. I only died twice on the first attempt and a subsequent attempt. And aside from that, all the mechanics and whatnot that we were working for with coaching over voice and working together as a team, we had absolutely no problem with that.
Well, looky there.
But it got better because on kill number 2, we got a grimoire, which split 3 damn. Ways. Which was
God, you're such a lucky bastard.
Yeah, that was about 118 mil split each for 3 ways. So.
Damn.
So at this point, the only things left to do for Reaper crew are Angel of Death and Rise of the Six.
I think Tycho does Angel of Death too, doesn't he?
Yeah. I'm just, next time, those pop up somewhat regularly in Clan Quest. So next time we do that, I'll go, or I'll just find a mass to go to, because the thing with those is you want to be in the top 10, because if you're in the top 10, you get credit for the kill and you get the lore book on the first kill.
Oh, nice. And I don't think Rots will be.
No, Rise of the Six will be fine. Yeah. Rise of the Six will be fine. It's just a question of setting the time around for it. I know that's another Clan Quest one as well that gets done, so it'll just be the right circumstances lining up for that. But as you can probably imagine with that, I haven't done much Slayer. I've been engrossed in other things.
Well, but maybe there were some Reaper tasks?
Eh? Oh, yeah, there's been daily Reaper tasks.
Well, there's a little Slayer then. A little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, just to kind of show what I'm doing with the Reaper tasks, in terms of, you know, practicing the shield switches and whatnot, because when you're new to PVM, you start with not switching, right? But then eventually you're going to want to work in a shield switch to use the wonderful defensive abilities, which reduce damage a lot and provide wonderful opportunities for heals. So what I did when I got my Hellwear Reaper is I just made an hour out of that and used that to practice defensives, because Hellwear is actually a pretty good boss to practice defensives on.
Yeah, I remember trying to practice that one. What was it? Devotion and Anticipation,
yeah.
I used.
Yeah, Devotion, Resonance, are two of the big ones. Debilitate is another important one as well.
Oh, yeah, that was one when he does the claw thing, right?
Yeah.
You do the ability. Yep.
Yeah, okay. And for hard mode Karapak, I've made, of course, great use of defenses as well, like Debilitate, Reflect and whatnot, Resonance, all those ones, Barricade as well. So
nice.
It's actually really interesting, because for people who know the way I play Star Trek Online, you'll know that one of my main on Star Trek Online has always been a tank or a healer. Right? So what doing this week with Solak and doing this with hard mode Karapak and Hellwear has done is it's made me want to explore more of that side of RS.
Nice.
So it's really interesting. And it, just like all the other bosses, you know, you question if you're gonna like it and whatnot. But I actually enjoyed Solak quite a bit.
Okay.
So just like I said at the end of December, if I'm ever asked or have the opportunity, like I did with raids, if there's ever an opportunity to go back to Solak, I would jump at that.
It's time, Shane. You know where you need to go, and you know what you need to do.
What's that?
Telos.
I've done Telos.
Have you?
Yeah, I haven't got to. I haven't done 100% in raid yet, but I've killed them like a dozen times.
Oh, okay. I guess I must have forgot that one.
Yeah.
Well then, I guess you're done here.
Well, in terms of done, of, you know, just ticking off the boxes for Reaper Crew, sure, but I mean, there's always improvements to be made, and that's also been a good thing that I've been able to do as well, is just kind of inch my way along and make advancements and improvements about certain pieces of equipment. Like right now, just to give everybody an idea of where I'm currently at, my next current decision is what the next big purchase is going to be, and it's likely going to be moving up from a budget-based Biting 2 setup to a Biting 4 setup, which, for anybody unaware, involves disassembling noxious weapons from Araxor. So that can be kind of expensive on that. So that's a big upgrade to make, but it's a full 2% crit severity or critical chance boost, which translates into that much of a damage increase. So those are the kind of next things we're kind of questioning, upgrading, and then just various different tactics along the way, because the defensives and stuff that I picked up at Hellweir and Hard Mode Carapack are also going to translate to things like Glacier and Zuck when I eventually go back there, too.
Feels like, do you feel like you've come a long way since QBD?
Yeah, I do. I feel like I've also come a long way since Carapack last summer. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Araxor broke the ice for you.
It did. It did. And the funny part about that is that as time has progressed, Araxor has moved down the list in terms of bosses that I prefer killing.
Yeah, I believe that.
Just because that boss is really interesting, because if it's a bad path or you do something wrong, there's a very high chance that you might wind up killing yourself.
Yeah, it does seem like a very tedious boss.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm enjoying this safe death event. It's allowed me to do some interesting things. One thing I definitely do want to try, and the only other major achievement that I haven't done yet for this free death week that I want to get done, or free death period that I want to get done, and I wasn't able to do it in December, was I want to try and get the solo Raksha kill done. But I'm not 100% confident on the mechanics yet, and there's just so much micro there that it's a difficult one for me. So,
you need a boss pet now, Shane.
What boss pet do you think I should get?
I don't know. Find a boss you like to do and get the pet. Well, you need a boss pet.
I got the Gorvek pet already at some point last year.
Okay.
So there's one. I wouldn't mind the Carapack one.
Hey, there you go.
I also wouldn't mind Little Sus from Krosis.
that one would be great.
It would. But in any case, I think that's it for this episode of Update, the calm before the storm, before Double XP begins. I don't have anything else, unless you do.
Nope. Go out there and get your gains. Enjoy.
And with that being said, subscribe to Update. We're on any podcast listener out there. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Pocket Cast, and Stitcher. Please do leave a review if your platform of choice supports that. It helps the podcast out in terms of discovery. And of course, we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. That's where you'll find these episodes in video form, the nibbles, and of course, the new micro lesson. So if you like that micro lesson, please do like and subscribe. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone. See you then.
See ya.